feels good to be a gangster.
It does feel good to be a gangster. That may be the first time Ghetto Boys has ever been played on public radio, even the internet version of it. This is the Bryant Park Project. I'm Luke Burbank.
And I'm Allison Stewart. And Luke, earlier in the week, you were genuinely sad.
Yeah.
When you were thinking about the end of The Sopranos, you said after you watched the penultimate episode, you got that sort of Sunday night, school's coming on Monday morning feeling.
Last week I was watching it and I really felt like someone I know is passing away. I mean, like, and the thing that they say is that you know it's happening, they're sick maybe, but then when it actually happens, it speeds up. And I just had this deep personal feeling of, like, this is happening too fast. Hold on, can we? I want them to put the paddles on The Sopranos as a show and jolt it back to life for, like, you know, and get the heart beating again. So
not happening, dude. It's ending Sunday night.
I guess not. But thankfully, we have a bona fide Sopranos fan in the person of Mike Pesca, who works for NPR's Day to Day. First story he ever did for NPR was about The Sopranos. So how fitting that he would do a big story for NPR on the end of The Sopranos. In fact, we're going to play that right now. So you take a listen.
It's not that The Sopranos isn't a show about murder. We've seen scenes like this one.
Oh, come on, please!
To the tune of 49 characters killed on screen over 85 near hours of TV. That body count doesn't even include a racehorse and a Maltese named Cosette. But the show's genius goes far beyond the schemes or the double crosses. Just as every medical drama comes back to a theme about healing, there is an undercurrent to The Sopranos, and that undercurrent is rot. American institutions, family, the legal system, the media, the church, they're picked up, examined, and flung aside. It's all done expertly, set in a world made real through the little details of modernity. Take Carmelo Soprano, the mob boss's wife. We've seen this archetype before, but never in such depth that we got to know her taste in the stars of romantic comedies.
Just last week, I told you I'm not a big Renee Zellweger fan.
Then, a few years later, she apparently backtracks on that very pronouncement.
I went to Blockbuster today to rent Cinderella Man, and guess what?
Is it still a classic?
On The Sopranos, it's so hard for the characters to connect, and when there seems to be that moment of communication, things almost immediately veer off into emotional rampages or confusion. Let's take one scene, a small gem. Here Bobby, Tony's underling, chats up his boss over steaks in a diner.
Mom really went downhill after the World Trade Center.
Post 9/11, this was the sort of admission heard in North Jersey a million times, but on episodic television, almost never. Back to Bobby in the diner.
You know, Quasimodo predicted all this.
Who did what?
All these problems, the Middle East, the end of the world.
Nostradamus. Quasimodo's the hunchback of Notre Dame.
Oh, right. Notre Dame.
Nostradamus and Notre Dame. It's two different things completely.
This was kind of a symphony of inarticulateness. It was funny on the surface, it developed character, and it even added to the tension, because now it seemed as if Tony Soprano was entrusting his life to a hulking dullard. Who knows how many viewers care about the subtleties? Many probably just want to see if Tony lives or dies. Either way, come Sunday night, 11 million or so Americans will want to know that AJ and Meadows still have a father, no matter how corpulent, murderous, and self-deluded Tony Soprano really is.
And to prove that Mike Pesca is a real person, mm-hmm. He's sitting immediately to my left. Now he's sitting up straight. He was chilling out, listening to his report. So, Mike, how did you decide to – how could you get that down to 2 minutes, considering everything that has happened in the course of The Sopranos?
I had to ignore a lot of death.
Yeah.
This is how I actually have to deal with it psychologically. You just ignore a lot of death and, like, concentrate on the fun moments.
Yeah, much like, you know, many of the characters on The Sopranos. It's all about the stuff that you forget or don't think about as much as the stuff that you think about. All right, guys, seriously, can we just go around the horn here, predictions? We'll start with you, Mike.
All right. 3 weeks ago, I said there's going to be a triangle, AJ, Christopher, and Tony. One will die. One will be the cause of the other's death. But in the end, I think it will be Tony, who lives but is forced to see, tortured by what his choices have wrought. So Michael Imperioli is Christopher died. Somehow that's going to work out. Tony won't die, but he'll be faced and tortured with everything, all his lies and everything that he didn't do right in his life.
Allison Stewart.
I have two things that keep sticking out in my mind. One, it's that they keep talking about terrorists. It's been this weird little throwaway thing. Yeah. The guys at the bada bing, the agent that Tony has befriended, who's supposed to be on the terrorism task force. Somehow, I don't know how, I think that might fold in to the events. It might be the strange wild card that sets off some series of events that you would never think. That's one idea. The other is, as everybody's been saying, what does a soprano do? They sing. So does Tony end up...
Oh, like a
stool
pigeon.
Going underground, becoming a stool pigeon to really get Phil Leotardo and maybe save his family or whatever's left of it?
I don't think it'll be the terrorists. This is what I think is going on with the terrorists. It's just like everything so often in The Sopranos, they take the flotsam and jetsam of the Jetsons. They take the Jetsons and Elroy.
Yes.
They take they take the stuff that's out there in the ether and they ground the show in the actual world that we live in. So when Bill and Hillary Clinton were going through their thing, you have the mafia wives kind of toasting Hillary Clinton saying, see, she got her own thing. After 9/11, we just heard that clip. And now it's all terrorism and it's all this feeling of anxiety. And so I think that's just kind of a plot device. And it paid off already. I mean, the reason that Tony knew about that this hit was on him was a thank you for giving up those terrorists. And it's a little too on the nose. I think when a lot of these people online that I look at make predictions, they forget that the show they're watching always zigs when you think it's going to zag, and it's never the guy that you think it's going to be. And if there has to be a hit, it happens when you least expect it. So things like the missing Russian, if we get too into that, the missing Russian, the terrorists, all these things that like when does
they
it
don't
pay
feel
off?
Like
it
they
pays
have
off
to
as
resolve.
Much as life. It's just
that's,
weird
and that's what's
and
so
unsettling.
Great about it. That's what's so great about it is they don't feel like they have to tie everything up. I mean, the Russian's a perfect example. This is a guy who ran off into the snow. We've never seen him again.
Did you have a favorite moment when you think back on The Sopranos when you explain to people why you think it's so great?
Oh, man. There are, like, so many. It's the stuff – you know, actually, that Renee Zellweger clip you played where there is this priest in the church who is a friend of Carmela, Tony Soprano's wife, except he is, like, an overeater, and he always shows up just to, like, gorge at her house. And also, he really apparently likes – you know, he's a sucker for a good Renee Zellweger flick. And to have these people having this conversation about something as banal as that movie, that, to me, it sort of typifies – you know, and anytime, but the Nostradamus thing, I mean, you really picked some winners there. Anytime you have kind of real pop culture life intersecting with this, like, sort of, you know, deadly situation that is being in the mafia, it always just kind of cracked me up.
One of my favorite moments is when Carmela Soprano realizes the power of the family she's in. She's having the affair.
Yeah.
And she threatens the guy after he breaks up. Like, do you know who you're breaking up with? Up until then, you sort of believe that maybe in some world in Carm's mind, she didn't really fully understand what was going on. But at that moment, she decides to embrace her life in a way that she had sort of tried to ignore in the past. And has since kind of gone on to ignore a little bit, but it lets you know that there's a whole other layer of Carmela going on, which I liked.
I think it's season one. That was kind of the Carmela character. She distanced herself from the immorality. But you know, as it went on, remember that scene where she tried to get her daughter into college? This is the great middle class, middle class goal. And she acted like a mafioso, you know? What threatening? I'm here to give you some food and to talk about my sweet young daughter and share your transcripts. So she's always willing to use it. And then when she went to the psychiatrist and he just basically told her, that scarf on your neck, that's a blood scarf, and that diamond on your finger, that's a blood diamond. And she could lie to herself. They all lie to themselves so much. There's never the moment where they say, my God, I've been lying to myself. And that's the genius of it. They're also inherently dishonest, and they have no idea what's really going on inside of themselves, just like real people.
All right, guys, we have 1 minute left. I already know my answer. What the hell are you going to do on Sunday nights going forward? I'm going to sob quietly, probably in the fetal position.
Well, considering we've got this new show, it's a good reason to go to bed earlier because we'll be getting in at 5, 4. So I'll be sleeping.
Michael.
It's time to crack open the Proust. You always said you'd do it.
Yeah, right.
This is what's keeping me from French literature.
Start working through all of
that.
I'm going to
be missing seeing
stuff.
My hometown, though. The Sopranos was like a travelogue of my high school life from the 70s and the 80s.
You said you had your first car accident?
I had my first car accident in like the parking lot of one of the scenes where The Sopranos was shot. I know all those joints. I used to spend quality time in Bloomfield, New Jersey.
Oh, it's so funny. I killed my first guy on a boat.
Yeah, it just was like the memories came flooding back. And I'm becoming obese. So we all have sort of connections, I think, real life connections to this show.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, if you need help, we'll be here Monday to work through the various stages of grief.
I love New Jersey.
By the way, if you know the ending, don't tell us, because we're on pins and needles. This is The Bryant Park Project with Mike Pesca.
Thanks, Mike.
Oh, I'm Luke Burbank.
Allison Stewart, too.
Yeah, you can say your name.
She's kind of more permanent.